Mr. Krieger, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mayor. Please report, my name is Bob Krieger, I represent Earl Stone. Two issues in this case, both relating to the imposition of a mandatory minimum prison term of 15 years. One first compelled by a statute that was amended in 2009, and the second is the result of the imposition of consecutive mandatory minimum sentences in this case. Skip the facts of the case. The facts of the case are not good. Mr. Stone was convicted of 4 counts of having sexual intercourse with a 15-year-old. He was older than 19, which by the ordinary definition of statutory rape is non-consensual sex act.
He was 58, right?
Right. And the statute for 2009 simply said anyone over 19 that has or subjects anyone 16 or under the sexual penetration commits the offense of statutory rape. It's class 2 felony, punishable by up to 50 years in prison with no mandatory minimum. The sentence encompasses the worst of the worst kind of abusive sexual assaults to the most innocent of mistakes, with the court given broad discretion in the class 2 felony designation of 1 to 50 with no mandatory minimum to fix an appropriate sentence. The maximum sentence one could receive under those circumstances would be 50 to 50 years, both determined and indeterminate number being the same, which would produce a 25-year sentence.
Mr. Krieger, isn't your position, when you boil it all down, is that there's no reasonable legislative judgment to distinguish the culpability of an actor between a 19-year-old and a 25-year-old?
The 24 and the 26-year-old is the 19. They don't make a distinction up to 24.
Fill in the numbers. Essentially, there's this period of time that the legislature is saying, okay, they're culpable, but we're not judging that they're as culpable as older people. Is that a legislative judgment that is simply beyond the pale? And I'm assuming that you would acknowledge that it's a rational basis test.
Yes. I'd like to find out what the rationale is. I've searched the legislative history. I've even searched my worthy adversary's brief. And the best we can come up with is older people should be wiser and smarter than younger people.
Well, now, haven't we in another context recently in the U.S. Supreme Court jurisprudence about the culpability of juvenile murderers said exactly sort of that thing? There is a difference. There's science out there that speaks to culpability of people under age 25.
Yes, and I'm not there. I'm not talking about the rational distinction between a 19, 20-year-old and an age of consent at 60. They have fixed dates. You have to fix a time. If you're going to say the age of consent is 16, you can make it 16, you can make it 17. There has to be some demarcation. And if you're going to say actors under 19 are not subjected to the sexual assault, kids having sex with kids is not a crime. That's a legislative prerogative. And so you can excuse the conduct of someone 19 or under and punish the conduct of someone 19 or older. I get that. And juveniles are yet further down the line. It's 16. I think they went as far as 16 in those cases to say at that point their criminal culpability is different. We're on the other end of the spectrum. We're saying, and if you wanted the best indication of what the problem is, it's just manifest in the offense itself. What I was trying to do with the age bracketing from the old law up to the new law is they fixed 12 as an important date of the victim. That is, victims under 12. Now, children have a separate classification of offenses. So if the normal statutory rape case involves a victim 12 or under, you move to a different statute. Otherwise, it's no offense under the sexual assault statute if the actor has sex with someone under 12. It doesn't fit. So you have to move to a different statute where you find if the victim is under 12 and you're 19 years of age or older, it's 15 to life. And it makes no distinction as to how old the actor is. It just simply says, once the victim is under 12, everybody, 19 and up, gets 15 to life, okay? Well, okay, so let's say that's the policy. But then in the next section, they say that if the victim is older than 12 but less than 16 and the actor is over 24, it's 15 to life. Under that, it's a Class II felony. So where, one would think, if there was a legislative determination that age...
So are you making a facial constitutional challenge?
This is a, I did not file a motion to quash before the case, before he pled. It's a penalty provision, it's not a statutory offense provision in the, I don't think I can strike the penalty provision, because the Class II, 20 to life, is probably okay.
I want to take that comment you just made. You say you don't think you can change the penalty provision. Will you help me understand precisely what kind of relief you were asking for in the trial court?
Okay.
With respect to your constitutional challenge, what kind of relief did you want?
If I had been really smart, I might have taken a look at the question of why is this offense equivalent to second-degree murder as a Class 1B felony? In other words, they made it a 1B felony. 20 to life is what they...
I'm not talking about comparisons.
No, but I'm trying to answer your question the best way I can, which is sometimes a little...
Okay, I'll be patient.
But they add in the phrase in the penalty provision, but it's got a 15-year mandatory minimum. The 1B has a 20-year minimum, but it's not a mandatory minimum. So they put a provision... The one and only case that I know of in a 1B felony that changes the 20 to life to a 15 to life, but the 20 is not a mandatory 20, so that means it's subject to parole in good time. So I think that the answer is you just disregard the mandatory minimum and you sentence him 20 to life. You sentence for what the legislature said the offense is, a Class 1B felony.
So you were going to ask the trial court, the relief you wanted from the trial court was to disregard...
The mandatory minimum.
The mandatory minimum.
Of the 15-year, not the 20-year. And I'm not, if you didn't run across that on the bench, that argument has been around for some time. Why is a second-degree murder, of all things, subject to a 20-year minimum that's not mandatory, but a consensual sex act between people of a disparate age has a 15-year mandatory minimum, which is a 30-year sentence? And any additional time you put on there has to be served half before you're eligible for parole.
If we accept that that was the argument you were making to the trial court, how is that argument different for Mr. Stone than for anybody else who's 25 or older?
I can sit around and conceive of 35-year-olds that violently rape children under 12 year old in which the facts, depending on what the rationale for this is, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm on uncharted water here. I'm sort of flailing around with the statutory mandatory minimums, which we're getting used to, but trying to figure out what the rationale is for the 24-year-old. Where in legislative history, where in jurisprudence, where anywhere have we said that a 25-year-old's culpability is significantly different than a 24-year-old's culpability that we go
through? Where would you have the line drawn?
There would be no line. Once you are of age and subjected to the laws and are criminally culpable for your conduct, 19, okay? Once you are over 19 and you have sex with a minor...
You have to be 19 or over. That's
19...
Once you are 19.
Excuse me?
You have to be 19 or over.
19 or older, all right. It makes no sense to punish you based upon your age. If that's true, let's say there is a... So should a 35-year-old then have a greater sentence? A 45-year-old, a greater sentence, and a 65-year-old, and the worst of all would be the 100-year-old. If you just look at the statute itself, if they had said the same thing with 19-year-olds and 12-year-olds, and if you're over 25, it'll be a 20-year mandatory minimum, I would at least get some sense that there was some thought in it. My sense is there is no real thought in any of this. It's just an arbitrary statement that says in a consent.
But is it applied equally to every person within that section?
It may.
Well, it is, isn't it?
Well, if you can come up with some fact pattern, depending on the rationale, it might not.
Your challenge is equal protection as applied?
Yes.
The argument seems to be coming around more and more to a facial challenge.
Well, let's assume that it is, all right? I've had those cases before. You can challenge it on its face, or you can challenge it as applied. If you challenge it on its face, it has to be as applied to you, or you don't have standing. So if it's applicable. If it's as applied to Mr. Stone, I think that gets me all I need. If you're going to say that, no, you should have filed a motion to quash, then please state that to Mr. Stone's next attorney to come up and do it correctly, I guess. I think the issue at least warrants some discussion as to why the 25-year-old gets a 15th life and the 24-year-old gets...
Your client is 58 years old.
All right, then have the statute say that that's what the issue is. So is that just a visceral thing? I don't think so. That's what I think. I think it's people simply say, well, this is just an old guy, a young girl, my God, we ought to do something harsh about it. But that still has to be rational in the scheme of the penalty. Second-degree murder we're talking about. It's worse than second-degree murder. And it doesn't have the same penalty if you had sex with someone under 12. It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't. And if it does, then I've done my bit to advance the issue. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Ms. Duffy, good morning to you.
May it please the court. Counsel, I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Appellant has assigned his error both an equal protection challenge to the statute as well as a claim of excessive sentence. The sentence imposed was within the statutory limits, and the state does not believe appellant can show an abuse of discretion. And unless there are specific questions about the statute imposed, I intend to just focus on the equal protection challenge. As an initial matter, the state believes that while appellant calls his challenge an as-applied challenge to the statute, he is in fact making a facial challenge, which he has not preserved by filing a motion to quash. He argues no facts specific and unique to his situation that makes the statute unconstitutional specifically as applied to him rather than another person to whom it also applies. He is challenging the entire classification that has been created by the statute, and that is a facial challenge which was not preserved for appeal.
Well, let's assume that somehow this is an applied challenge. What's the rationale for the second line? I mean, I understand the line, the first line, age 19 or older. What's the rationale for the second line?
Well, Your Honor, I think, as sort of as you were discussing, that by the age of 25, an adult should know better. And I guess I'll turn to, I found three little lines in a hearing on LB 97 in 2009. So the changes were made, and this was not in my brief, I apologize. I discovered this while preparing for this argument. LB 97 made the changes to the statute at issue. It was not in the original version of the bill. It was amended into LB 97 through AM 893. And on March 11, 2009, at the Judiciary Committee hearing on LB 97, the committee also heard testimony on LB 15, which was part of that big amendment that put a bunch of stuff into LB 97. And Senator White, on page 3 of the transcript, about two-thirds of the way down, in discussing his bill, LB 15, as well as kind of the general amendment, stated, "But it also has a provision in there that takes care of one of the problems that often has given me pause in this area, which is older, usually boys, but sometimes girls, dating younger members in their high school. It introduces a concept of ages to get away from a sliding scale. Basically, a person who's over 25 has no business dating younger people, and it sets that forth in the bill." So I think, you know, we could conceive of a 19-year-old who maybe meets someone when he is 18 and in high school, and that person's 14 or 15. They're still culpable, and it is still a crime, but it is not a crime that warrants that harsher punishment.
But the legislature defines what X will be crimes, and it defines at what age you do commit these crimes, and it's not unequally applied to the defendant in this case because the defendant's 58 years old.
That's correct, Your Honor. So the state
clearly beyond 25, and the legislature for some reason made 19 to 25 a period in which the charge or the acts would result in a lesser penalty. Not that they were not a crime, but they would result in a lesser penalty.
That's correct.
And under 19, it isn't a crime, right?
Well, it's not a crime on its face. I think that the first degree sexual assault statute does provide that when a person who subjects another to sexual penetration, who knew or should have known the victim was mentally or physically incapable of resisting or consenting. So that situation may be an 18-year-old and a 5-year-old that was brought up. It wouldn't be first-degree sexual assault of a child, that is correct. So even if this court disagreed and found that it was a properly preserved as-applied challenge, the state believes that the claim still fails because first we believe that the appellant cannot show he's being treated differently than another similarly situated person. The argument of a 24-year-old committing sexual intercourse with a 15-year-old, that 24-year-old would have committed first-degree sexual assault, whereas appellant was convicted of first-degree sexual assault of a child, which has a different penalty.
Are you alluding to a threshold similarly situated conclusion or a similarly situated conclusion at the end of the rational basis test?
I think sort of at the beginning is where I was going with this, but I suppose it could carry throughout. I think initially when I kind of analyzed this, it was, has appellant proven he's being treated differently, that there's different treatment from someone who is similarly situated, and if even if he could, the state does not believe he is. But even if he could show that, there is a rational basis for that different treatment. So at any stage of the analysis, the state believes the appellant challenge fails. So even if he has preserved this, even if he is similarly situated, there is a rational basis for the different treatment.
Has the United States Supreme Court endorsed a threshold similarly situated test, to your knowledge?
Your Honor, I'm not sure.
Series of cases at the U.S. Supreme Court regarding juvenile justice and juvenile murderers and so forth. Customarily, these cases are coming through the system with records where psychologists and lots of folks with training talk about brain development and what's going on at 17, 18, 19, and what's going on at 24, 25, and 26. There's nothing like that going on here, right? You found some legislative history.
Correct, Your Honor. There is very scarce legislative history on this specific change to the statute. There's a lot about LB 97 from 2009, okay. But unfortunately it does not deal with this specific issue.
Do we have the sort of case here where that sort of evidence would have been presented to the district court in the first instance? And was there ever a motion for the court to rule on? Ever an opportunity to offer evidence in support of or against the constitutional issues being raised here?
I believe the constitutional issue was first raised in a letter that was submitted in the pre-sentence investigation report as part of the sentencing. Appellant's counsel laid out the argument, and then it was mentioned again at the sentencing hearing as well. I don't recall seeing any sort of psychological testing or research about brain development. As I mentioned, the state believes this was not properly preserved because it is a facial challenge, not an as-applied. Even if it was, we don't believe appellant could show he's being treated differently. And even if he could show he's being treated differently, he cannot show that there's not a rational basis for that different treatment. If there are no additional questions, we ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. That concludes oral arguments for the day. The court is adjourned and you are excused.